Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom-line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele, a show that matches business mentees with exceptional mentors to provide the skills and knowledge to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. Beyond Mentorship is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good evening and welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Mentorship here at 101.9 High FM as well as Net 1.1. My name is Nimrod Upambela. I am delighted once again to share this space and time with you as we continue to unpack topical governance and entrepreneurship issues through the lenses of my esteemed guests who are knowledgeable in their fields. In today's conversation, I'll be joined by Dr. Tsepo Fela, who is a commissioner at the National Planning Commission, and our conversation will center around the National State Enterprise Bill. In the second half of the show, I'll be joined by Surprise Sahut, who's the founder and MD of Touch SA Marketing, and we'll hear more about the digital marketing space and the extent to which he has been able to navigate a stiff competition from that end. Before we get into the gist of our conversation, it is a norm for one to acknowledge certainly the producers of the show. Michael, before we get to the producers, Michael, I thank you very much for driving or creating a very soft landing ground for Beyond Mentorship. Michael and his overdrive team will be back tomorrow at your radio at the same time, so do stay tuned. I also want to, express my gratitude to Craig Cotrue, who is the controller. Thank you very much, Craig. And, of course, Daniel Kostner, who is the producer of the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much for navigating the show with your required finesse. Moving along, if you miss any of our previous conversations or episode, not to worry. Simply go to our website, download any of the previous podcasts. And, of course, I request you that you weigh in tonight's conversation about our SMS line, which is 34519, the Telegram is 061-895-1019, and your invaluable thoughts are most welcome via my X handle, which is at underscore at Dr. Mbele. In setting the scene, we all know that the overwhelming majority of state-owned enterprise have suffered severe lapses, and which means they fail to add value to the fiscal side. Instead, they drain resources. And we also heard from the Zondo Commission on how state capture, which really six volumes at the cost of over a billion rands. We also been told through that report and numerous other media reports that how SOEs were used to siphon billions of rands by politicians and their cronies. So in making sense of the revised government had to look at how to reconfigure the SOE, and through the bill that has been done. So I'm joined by Dr. Tsepo Fela, who's a commissioner at the National Permission Commission. My good sir, thank you very much, Doc, for gracing Beyond Mentorship with your presence. Looking forward to have a very interesting conversation with you.
Good evening, Dr. Mbele. No, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
You're most welcome indeed. I'm told that we're going to have to take a very quick break. Let's be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. My name is Nimrod Mbele. You haven't really missed a thing, so do stay tuned. I'm in company of Dr. Tsepo Fela, who is a commissioner at the National Planning Commission, and the thrust of our conversation is the National State Enterprise Bill. Dog, thank you once again. Are you able to give us a perspective of where the Commission sits, or what's the overall position of the Commission in relation to the National State Enterprise Bill?
Thanks again, Doc. Look, as the Commission, it has always been a concern, the state of SOEs, as you've mentioned, and the deterioration thereof over the years. And I think we had to get to this point and reconfigure. Otherwise, the disasters would have gone even worse. But the bill then seeks to revitalize and restructure the governance of the SOEs. And we as the Commission are in support of it, provided that it's monitored carefully and it is executed well. There are quite a lot of advantages from the bill and what it seeks to achieve, looking at its objectives, the strategies, the governance structures, and so forth. It's a good thing in a nutshell.
No, thank you very much for that. I certainly agree with you. The nation as a whole, it would obviously be optimistic to see the bill of this nature taking off, particularly in the context of the quagmire that we have noticed through the state capture. But having said that, one key question is the proposed holding company, of which the president will be the shareholder, representative of the shareholder. And that particular issue raises a number of questions around political interference, raises question around accountability. What is the Commission's position in relation to the president being the sole representative of the shareholder?
That in itself has a lot of, it raises a lot of questions and disadvantages as well. It would seem too much power is then shifted to the president or whoever he appoints as a representative in his absence, and in that way we understand that the president comes from a political party, and how do we then prevent the political interference that has actually gotten us to this place in the first place, the political interference that we've seen in the boards of Eskom, the boards of Transnet, and so forth. And so in consultation, the bill in itself is not really clear on the procedures and powers of appointment of the boards and the different subsidiaries. And so, that is something that needs to still be ironed out, and I suppose it can be done in a subset of contracts and things like that. So we have an agent theory in corporate governance at play here, and we then believe that there should be further consultation, especially if we are going to drill down on the duties of the president or the representative of the state in the holding company, the duties of the board, how the board is appointed, and so forth. And that needs to be a very open and transparent conversation. The powers that the president can appoint the board, it is a risk in itself, and it needs a mitigating control to avoid the appointment of political figures from the ANC and so forth, which then defeats the whole purpose of the bill in the first place. A general conversation, there's still conversations in the background that are still happening, and we are well aware of them, and we are still participating in that engagement.
Now, it's good to hear that some weaknesses that you have noted as a commission in the bill itself, and there are measures that are taking place to try and remedy those particular issues. You raised a pertinent point earlier on about the principal agency theory. We all know that, when you look at principal agency theory, it goes to show that the agents can somehow manipulate the principal. In this particular instance, you have seen it through the boards, so which does call upon a very stricter role of first and foremost the appointment of the boards, and based on a particular template. Obviously when you compare South African the bill in relation to how other countries are appointing boards on a meritocratic principle and templates. How is the Commission persuading government to look into other countries? For an example, when you look at Singapore, Temasek Holding, I mean, it's an investment company owned by government, and operate as commercial entity, while autonomy to make investment decisions is entirely left up to the board. But when you look at the boards, the powers of the board, it's unclear at this point how the board, first and foremost, what sort of powers will be vested in the board, and which will make them more competitive. Your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, look, part of governance in itself, you know, forms part of the NDP, of which we are the custodians of, and ours, you know, through the different task teams and the work streams, ours is to advocate for proper governance, and of course in relation to other countries. We do have platforms where we can learn. We have the BRICS. I mean, you look at China as well, you know. Alongside Singapore, you look at China, they probably one of the countries with the most state-owned companies, and how is it that they can run efficiently? I mean, you know, through the BRICS platforms, through the G20s and so forth, we do have opportunities of engagement, opportunity of learning through our peers to say, what is it that they do that we are not doing? We might have, you know, different predispositions as a country, but going forward, looking at our national and long-term development plans, governance plays a very important role, and we ought to then go back to company or countries like China, for example. How do they deal with their long-term development plans? They have a 100-year plan, they have a 50-year plan, and they break it down and so forth. And within that plan, they then seek the objectives and how to utilize state-owned companies to achieve their long-term development plans. So the, you have corporate South Africa or business South Africa, I might call it, and it's crucial that if we get it right, the economic growth of the country could be positively influenced and very significantly so as well. And so we then need to go back to, you know, countries like Malaysia and see how, you know, they came up with this model, what were the objectives, and do proper research and have proper conversation and continue conversations, that is, on how we're going to carry on this. So we, from the position of the Commission, we believe that, like I was saying, this has to be a conversation that is ongoing. This document, this bill, should be a living document, and it should be, you know, restructured, rewritten, whatever the case, or amended as we go along, as we learn new things, and as we prepare, and as the SOEs in themselves change and grow and revitalize. For all we know, this bill might not be significant in 20 years, because, you know, looking at it, it's also structured around how government in itself is structured, and should that change, for example, you know, we might have to rewrite this thing again. So we might have to take a long-term view or a long-term perspective on this bill, because it seems to be a little bit midterm. So we might have to align it as well to the objectives of the NDP or the development plan of the country, and see how then we sustain this over the same period of time. Thanks.
Those are interesting observations that you put into us. But obviously the albatross that's sitting on our neck, which still require more clarity, is the political interference. The bill obviously puts forth one of the mechanisms which the bill put forward is the Presidential Advisory Committee, and which is comprised of obviously NEDLAC, private sector organization.
Yeah, NEDLAC again.
Yeah. As well. And I mean that's it's the same old. Nothing has really changed. How do we foster confidence in because when you look at the composition of the presidential panel, it's predominantly dominated by political folks. Your take on that?
No, you are absolutely right. And it's one of the concerns as well that we've raised, that look, if you look at, for example, the National Planning Commission, In most instances, it's non-political. We don't discuss politics. It's not affiliated to any party. We are basically we're sitting in the presidency's office and we advise government on issues of national development. And so a similar structure when it comes to SOEs could also work where it is apolitical structures, and we look for competence, at least for now, until we can bring out or we can revitalize our SOEs to their former glory. Understanding as well where these SOEs come from in the pre-democratic state and how they were used before. So there might be those lingering legacies in there, and why there might still be a little bit of political influence and so forth. So from our standpoint, standing outside, we may not know the mechanisms that drive these politics or why is there political influence, however small, and what is the reason for it. But you might find it's a predominantly historical and cultural thing that has been happening over years and might be difficult to change for whatever issues, whether it's trust or whatever political issues that I play there. And then so we will then have to have a conversation around that and see how do we then take this political influence away from the SOEs and let politics be politics and let business be business.
I couldn't agree with you more. One of the issues that we all grapple with is that there's no reason why state-owned enterprises should not operate like a business in terms of efficiency, in terms of innovations, in terms of output, in terms of the returns on investment. But why is it that when looking at state-owned enterprises, we want to have a different model, knowing exactly that the returns on investments under the current environment are not guaranteed? We appreciate, one appreciate the shareholding company, the one appreciate the bill in terms of its trajectory. However, there are serious gaps. For an example, when you look at the provision for investments, the bill makes no provision. And how is the SOE landscape going to compete with the likes of Singapore, with the likes of China, for crying out loud, look at Ethiopian Airways. It's just across the our neighbors here typically, and they're doing exceptionally well purely because governance model is operating on commercial basis. Surely it does not mean in China, it does not mean in Singapore, it does not mean in Ethiopia there aren't those political issues. It is just that the mayors, the politicians, have given the boards sufficient powers to make decisions, and they hold the boards accountable on the basis of the agreed upon targets. If you don't deliver, you out you go. And at what point will we get to that stage where KPIs outlined, targets outlined, the shareholder only comes through or asks questions at the annual general meeting, or clearly in any other format without necessarily intruding and interfering in the operations of the board? Because that's no way in which the SOE board, SOEs will be as competitive as the bill contemplate under the current circumstances. Surely that's it's not good enough. Your take on that?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. As I was mentioning, the bill takes a sort of a mid-term perspective and not necessarily a long-term, stance. But one of the advantages of having the holding company is that, everything now gets to be consolidated. So instead of going to the different entities, you can have, whichever ones that have been transferred to the holding company, you can have your consolidated financials there, and I suppose then accountability can start from there. To say, looking at the balance sheet of the holding company, looking at the financials of the holding company, why has there not been the strategy that you've set? Why has it not been achieved? Why are the variances so large to the actuals or to the budgeted or to the objectives, and looking at that as well, we can then be able to track over years the progress, but looking at one picture, a holistic picture, as opposed to individual. Previously, and I suppose one of the risks of having the SOEs run under the different departments was that it was fragmented, and reporting was very fragmented, accountability and governance was fragmented. So at least here, then we get to have a holistic view where we can consolidate all the shares, consolidate all the financials, and have one big strategy that can then, one big corporate strategy that can then trickle down into the different business strategies of the 17 SOEs that will be transferred there. So it will take some time, and there's still a lot. You know, there's going to be a very steep learning curve if we need to move quickly and get our SOEs operational. I mean, if this is done well, they're estimating that it could save us about 27 billion rand with this consolidation, which is quite a good thing. And it will then have to determine when this board or these different boards are appointed, how is that process going to be? Where is the transparency? Where is the procedure? And it should be available for public scrutiny, really. And we should be able to have a say that, look, we don't think this process of appointing the board is transparent enough or is good enough, and that whatever the case might be. And then there should be a continuous stakeholder engagement around, especially the governance structures of the entire thing.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree with you more. Perhaps maybe as we quickly wrap up, I mean, you correctly indicated that this is obviously not an event, but a long-term project which needs to be carefully thought through. One of the biggest issue, if we were to go back to the state capture, we've dealt with a dysfunctional organizational culture. It will take some time. All those 17 entities that you refer to, which will be part of the holding company, it's not obvious. It will go beyond just, you know, a paper transfer. You have to deal with values. You have to deal with organizational cultures. You have to deal with leadership structures. To what extent is the commission advising the powers that be on sequencing these kinds of interventions, such that by the time the strategies are aligned or strategies have been formulated, there is a very good framework around organizational culture and values, which will underpin the positive trajectory? We all know that without good organizational culture, as they say, culture eat strategy for breakfast. You can have a fantastic strategy, but without grounded culture, and that is owned by everybody else, where we know if you do not perform, you're out, and there's no politicking here. If you do not meet your targets, these are the consequences. To what extent the commission is advising government on a framework on how to manage organizational culture, such that program that comes through take into account those complexity, because behavioral change is the most difficult thing to achieve.
Look, that's a difficult one, especially given that those elements or the culture, I mean, the culture of corruption, for example, and the toxic culture within the different organizations, because they've become so embedded in there, and they've become a historical pain. And because, unfortunately, for us as the commission, we sit at a national higher level and not on the day to day. All we can see from our perspective on the toxic culture is within the performance, within the different charges that they bring to the people, and so forth. So there's this whole mess that is happening there. Of course, then we then have to come to government and say, look, you have to deal with the qualitative elements of the institution as well. Let's just not look at the triple bottom line only, but let's look at the qualitative elements. How do we then, you know, if we can't do it in-house, how do we bring in professionals to deal with this culture? There might have to be a overhaul of skills, overhaul of you know, staff and so forth, especially starting at management level, and see how we then replace those with new people that they can bring a new culture from a bottom, from a top top-down approach. It is also a very long-term thing. You know, I wish we could just serve a magic wand and then people will change. But there's certain cultural elements that have become historic and embedded within these organizations.
No, no, I hear you.
You might even have to do the procurement,
I hear you. You and I have got a date on the 29th of August because there's going to be a corporate we've got a corporate governance conference, you know, that is going to be, you know, done in partnership with Henley Business School. So I expect you to be there so that you can weigh in more on how we're going to change the SOE as contemplated in the bill. I challenge you that you, you know, I challenge you and I want you to be there. Do promise that you'll come through.
It's done.
No, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave you. It has been absolutely beautiful. That was Dr. Tshepo Fela, who is a commissioner at the National Pending Commission, giving us his perspective on how the landscape of SOEs, as contemplated in the bill, will try and transform the economy as it should. My good doctor, thank you very much for gracing Beyond Mentorship with your presence.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the invitation. I look forward to engaging with you even further. We'll see you on the 29th.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Was as I've indicated, that was Tshepo Fela, who is a commissioner at the National Commission Planning Commission, giving us a very interesting observation and insight. We now get into the second segment of the conversation after the break.